Welcome to The Rink, your weekly source for hockey talk without the entitlement. I'm James Tapelag-Gralian, along with Tom Luongo. This week, the Caps force Game 7. The Vancouver Canucks do not. The Bruins prove that the bigger they are, the harder they fall. The NHL isn't exclusive to teams being moved, and Tom and I get to have a lightning round. It's time for The Rink. Tom, the second round of the playoffs are getting more and more exciting. The Washington Capitals do it again, and they force Game 7 in Pittsburgh, an exciting Game 6, which went to overtime. This time, though, the overtime doesn't go to the Penguins' side, which kind of surprised me. I know that I was kind of sweating bullets for the Caps once I saw that it was going to overtime.
Well, yeah, I think Versus put up the stat that Marc-Andre Fleury had never lost in overtime in the playoffs. He was 5-0.
And wow,
tonight. That ended tonight. Was a Steckel got a stick on a puck from the floater from the point and snuck right underneath Fleury's arm. We're going to Game 7. So the question I have is, can the Bruce Boudreau-led Capitals play anything other than a 7-game series?
They like to get behind, don't they?
This is 3 in a row now, because they got eliminated in 7 by Philly last year, and it's 7 against the Rangers, and now 7 against Pittsburgh. I don't think anybody was surprised at this. I think we all predicted a 7-game series. So
yeah, there was it might have been the Brooks Like penalty or the near the end with 2:02 left in regulation, or the Steckel slashing, one of the two. But I thought Bruce Boudreau was going to have a heart attack. He was screaming so much.
To be honest with you, I couldn't believe they actually called that slash after, 30 seconds before Semin got literally hauled down, slew-footed, and punched in front of the net with the puck on his stick, and no call. Mm-hmm. And then 30 seconds later, some weak little slash. And the guy drops his stick in order to make sure he gets the call. The hell with that. Sorry. If I was Bruce Boudreau, I would have been pissed off too.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the in the third period, the Brooks Orpik hooking call. It looked like he hooked, I don't even remember who he hooked, hauled the guy down, and then kind of stood over him and bitched at the guy. It's really funny.
We've said it before, and we'll say it over and over again. The referees always don't want to be factors in who wins and who loses by calling penalties or not, but by not calling the game consistently, obviously you are affecting the outcome of the game. And what's annoying for me is if you are going to swallow the whistles or whatever, you have to call anything that negates a scoring chance. Mm-hmm. And the haul down on Semin with 3 minutes left in the game, or 3.5 minutes left in the game, whenever it happened, that's a clear late game penalty that negates a brilliant scoring chance. Because if he's not hauled down, he's one on one with Fleury, 3 minutes left in the game, and that's the right. It's a good penalty to take, and it should have been called. And to not call that was just reprehensible. And then on top of that, call the weak slash because the stick was over in the corner, and there's Darryl Ray sitting there going, well, there's the prima facie evidence or some other whatever rotten nonsense. You talk about a person who's even worse about using the Roger's thesaurus to get through a night than I am. It's got to be Darryl Ray. Drives me crazy. Sitting there with a list.
Some days Joe Beninati is the same way. He just has this list. They checks off how many ticks are on the clock and how many, the same stuff ever. It's like,
but that's fine. That's his regular calls. But with Ray, he actually goes out of his way, honestly, to come up with whatever 50-cent word he can possibly, find and then somehow throw it in there.
You remember when Beezer was on Versus for a little while,
right?
Mm-hmm. Doing color, and one night it seemed like sexual innuendo night. One night he actually said they're starting to bump uglies here in Denver. Yeah, and then shortly after that, somebody takes a shot on Budai, and he says, "You're gonna have to try harder than that. That's not gonna penetrate. That's not going in, buddy."
Oh my God!
And I was on a message board that night, and I wasn't the only one. And the sad part is, I actually met him and I didn't ask him. He was around his family, so I just didn't feel right about asking. Yeah, can I give an all hail to Steckel for not only getting the game winner in tonight's game six with the Capitals, but also what was it, game two of Caps Pens when Crosby got a hat trick and Ovechkin got a hat trick, and who was the only other person to score, and therefore the difference? Steckel. So, right. Yeah,
he's had a good series.
Yeah,
they were good tonight. But wow, that was a sloppy game. That was definitely. Please don't go late in overtime, because we won't be able to field 18 players who are fully hydrated by Wednesday, sort of thing. Because this is what, their fourth game in six nights with travel. Yeah,
yeah.
I know Pittsburgh to Washington isn't much, but still.
And Ovechkin with three assists tonight. No goals, but three assists.
Yep.
And Viktor Kozlov with two. All I heard was when I was listening to – I was in the car and I was listening to the Penguins broadcast. And even the Penguins broadcaster said, oh, my, what a shot. Kozlov can really wrist it. And so that was – when the Penguins broadcast team is giving you props and you're not a Penguin, that's pretty good. So
For those who are interested, we're not talking about Vancouver and Chicago, because it's like 12 minutes left in the third period as we're doing this right now, and it's 4-4 and we don't know what's going to happen. So
exactly, yeah. Can Vancouver's up on shots 31-24 right now with about, as far as my real time says, 10 minutes to go. 32-24. And Tom, you were mentioning to me off air about Sundin and his ice time.
Yeah, well, what was it? Because I think it was very early in the playoffs. Tom Benjamin had the ever cranky Tom Benjamin had a post up about how when they should get Taylor Pyatt back from bereavement, and if you put him in over the Sundin. And here we are facing elimination, and the three Swedes, the Sedin bots and the Sundin himself, are leading the Canucks in ice time, and Matza's got 1-1. He's plus one, five shots on goal. So it's
the whatever game was wrong with him before seems to be corrected.
Is not there now. So yeah, he may not have been able to get up the ice, and you know, may have taken an entire shift to get from one end of the ice to the other earlier in the playoffs. That doesn't seem to be the case right now.
No. And you know, I don't know what, I actually still don't know what happened to him with his black eye. Something was up with him, but you know, I never actually saw anything. So maybe Roberto Luongo chopped him accidentally or something, who knows.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. With the Blackhawks and the Canucks facing elimination, it seemed like it's been a pretty chippy series, but I don't really know if any game has been more chippy than this last was it game five of the Bruins and Hurricanes. Holy cow.
Well, yeah, we had the slash on Chara by UC Okunin, which didn't look like much to me, other than he was, you know, he was looking for an opportunity to, you know, nick Chara, and he happened to nick him like right in the one spot on his ankle that's not.
Yeah, there's nothing on the back of the ankle, so that's a tough. That doesn't feel good. He was rolling around quite a bit, and hey, maybe, you know, I mean, sticks are pretty light these days, and you can get some speed on them really easy, even with one hand. And yeah, it's I don't think Jokinen meant to do any damage there.
Now, unlike Scott Walker.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Scott Walker one is pretty interesting. Scott Walker, of course, I won't argue with the description of sucker punch on that one. That absolutely looked like a sucker punch, and considering how quickly after the whistle that happened, it was near instantaneous after the whistle. I can't argue that being a sucker punch.
I can only try and figure out, as Wyshynski put up on the Puck Daddy about this, that now that Colin Hamble has decided to redefine the word automatic to mean, well, no, not automatic suspension. So Walker gets $2,500, a slap on the wrist, and he gets to play in Game 6, as opposed to getting the automatic one-game suspension he's supposed to get for getting an instigator within 5 minutes of the end of the game.
Right.
Now, especially given the fact that Aaron Ward stood there with his hands at the sides and his gloves on, making absolutely no motions whatsoever to get into a fight, and the fact that Walker was third man in because the original scrum happened between Cullen and Ward. And that's one thing to stand up for your team, and it's another thing to just walk right up and, you know, say four words and then punch a guy in the eye.
Right.
And that's suspendable.
I thought it was I have no argument with suspending him. I just my argument at this point is that there's even some I'm mad that there's a provision in a way that states the it's what is it fines and suspensions rule 47.22 a player or goaltender who is deemed to be an instigator in an altercation in the final 5 minutes of regulation time or at any time in overtime shall automatically be suspended for one game. Okay. That's pretty cut and clear. And it's, I wouldn't argue one bit, an instigator call on that. But then it states after that, the director of hockey operations will review each such incident and may rescind the suspension based on a number of criteria. Well, then why even say it's automatic? What's the point? It's just going to piss people off when it doesn't happen, you know?
Well, there's that. Yeah, so the rule is – so the first part of the rule is completely superfluous and superseded by the director of hockey operations' ability to say, well, no.
Right.
And somehow – what I don't understand is how Walker was able to talk himself out of this. Well, I felt like I was going to get into a fight, so I preempted the entire thing by dropping the guy with one punch before they even squared up.
Yeah, or the other side, or Aaron Ward's gloves had been dropped.
Yeah, so. There's a great picture that the AP or the Getty Images guy, the photographer, got of Ward standing there like hunched over, like leaning into it as Walker's about ready to punch him. I'm like, you know, he looks like he's half asleep, for Christ's sake. He's like, you know, he looks like he's ready to get punched, like he's a punching bag.
You know what? I think at this point I need to pull out this quote because I immediately thought of this. Christopher Titus in his comedy special Norman Rockwell is Bleeding said about the first time that he fought his dad. By the way, great way to fight: arms down, face presented. That's exactly what I saw there. Come on. maybe that's how Walker talked his way out of it. Maybe he just brought that picture and said, "Dude, look at him. He was begging for it. It was wide open."
and worse than that, I'm going to make the argument that Walker knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah,
a 4-0 game, 3 minutes left, take out one of their best defensemen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And anybody who tells me that the NHL isn't Bush League for not dealing with this properly, it's just sad.
Well, here's what I'm going to say about him. If he wants to if he's going to continue, you know, if this is the kind of thing that's going to happen, and Scott Walker's going to be back in the next game, he still has to deal with Lucic. And I wouldn't want to deal with that,
or Sean Thornton, or whatever. And this is the thing. Okay,
you don't want to get Chara mad.
Oh, you don't want to get Chara mad because he'll single-handedly he'll eat you and your babies and score the game-winning goal.
Yeah.
But what I don't understand is if we don't want another more Bertuzzi, we don't want another. The Brashear, McSorley. We don't want any of these things. And yet, somehow, for Scott Walker's own personal protection, he shouldn't be on the ice tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Period.
But he will be. And if anything happens to him,
Colin Campbell should be liable.
Well, if anything happens to him, they're going to... They'll blame
the guy who did it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't blame the guy who does it, and that's not it. Colin Campbell had it within his power to defuse the situation. He chose not to do it. And if anything happens to him, I'm blaming him.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
No, I'm with you all the way on that one.
Cool.
Wow. Now, oh, by the way, it is now with 6 minutes and 30 seconds left, 5-5. yes.
I can't. Okay. Mine just updated and it was 5-4. And now you're telling me it's 5-5. Why am I behind you?
I have no idea. I don't know what you're looking at right now, but I'm looking at the real time. I'm looking at the real time from NHL.com, the little real time window. And penalty, Chicago is going on the power play, too. So. Yeah, it was 45 seconds after Vancouver made it 5-4.
Right.
Chicago tied it up, Kane.
And why are we doing this podcast and not watching this game?
I don't get verses at my hotel.
Fair enough.
I would be elsewhere.
Fair
but,
enough.
You know.
And I'm on a sling box. So you guys get to listen to us banter tomorrow, and we get to sit here and say, yes, we're losers. Okay.
All right, we got 6 minutes and 11 seconds of time to finish this sucker up before it goes to overtime, if it's going to. So if it goes to overtime, I want to get somewhere and watch that.
Okay.
We got plenty of business to talk about because, of course, our last podcast was the special edition talking about the Phoenix Coyotes and their situation, the bid by Jim Balsillie. And the surprising thing to me about all this is that there hasn't been – for all of the major, major flurry of activity at the beginning, there hasn't been much since. Since everything went to the very first court date, there's been a massive slowdown. And there really doesn't seem to be much news other than a lot of bickering between the Balsillie camp and pretty much, as I've heard it, Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly seems to be the guy who's pretty much the vocal front on all of
right.
this.
I do know that Bettman came out and said, what did he say, that he didn't think he could get this, he could convince the ownership group to accept this situation or whatever. And then there's the further, it's 6-5 by the way, Chicago, and that there's a further that there's a that furthermore Jerry Moyes lost control of the team when the NHL dumped $38 million into Phoenix, and I'm sure that then I sort of heard something else, that they're going to have a hard time convincing a bankruptcy judge of this, the same way that they had a really hard time apparently in Pittsburgh.
Hmm.
So the Coyote turns at this point.
At this point for me, I'm looking at $38 million is no insignificant number, obviously, for the NHL
right.
and for the league basically to be subsidizing this team. But at the same time, that's not even close to a little over a third of what Moyes has invested slash lost in this team just in the bankruptcy filing. That's just as what he's owed as a creditor right now.
Right. And apparently what he said was that I accidentally got, became an owner of this team by being a good friend to somebody and the original owner and helping them get the move to Glendale done and putting in a couple million dollars. And then all of a sudden now I'm here I am 3 years later and I'm, $100 million farther along and I don't want to be here anymore.
I've accidentally stepped in dog poop, but I've never accidentally stepped into an ownership situation.
Well, you understand what I mean.
Yeah, totally.
He did the friend a favor or whatever and threw the money up there and then, okay. But this is, he's obviously, this, what he has now, is not what he originally bargained for.
No.
So
friends don't let friends buy the Phoenix Coyotes.
Yeah,
I like
exactly.
you, Tom, but I'm not going to become an owner of the Islanders for you. I'm just saying.
Okay.
I like you, owner's Islander, ownership enough.
But then again, think about it this way. James, couldn't we really buy the Islanders for a bag of pucks?
Are you kidding me?
And a six-pack of beer?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm expecting Mr. Charles Wong to be outside of a convenience store kind of going, hey, come in here. You're going to love this. I got something here for you. Two for one.
Yeah. No, it's going to be like Jay and Silent Bob outside the Quick Stop. Come on, man.
I want to see. I want to see Charles Wong singing "The Bird" by Morris Day and the Time. That would be a brilliant thing to see. Somebody's got to YouTube that. Somebody, yeah, please.
$50, little man. Put that in my hand. Come on, that'd be awesome. You can have my team.
OEO.
Exactly. And on top of this news, we got, you know, apparently a whole bunch of people sniffing around at the Atlanta Thrashers too, including a Vancouver group that, of course, wants to move them to Hamilton. Mm-hmm. It seems like everyone wants to move to Hamilton these days. So,
no kidding.
You know, Ball Silly better watch himself.
How would you like to be Hamilton right now? I have a really graphic thing in my head that I'm not going to say, but at the same time, you're kind of like that, you know, that date gone wrong. That just kind of wants to get every, you know, get as much in as he possibly can. You know, it's almost like it's these people in Hamilton, after a while, they have to be feeling just like totally jerked around. In a couple of years, it'll be like, right. Oh, yeah, we know, another team, whatever.
Yeah. You know, so. By the time they're done, they might want to put three teams in Hamilton, and you know, they'll have to like share the same arena.
No kidding. I'm moving there. I'm going to move there. It seems like a very prosperous area.
But apparently, all kidding aside, the current ownership group in Atlanta has no interest in moving the team. Obviously, they own the arena. They need to have that place filled. And, and as bad as the Thrashers are, they are 41 guaranteed dates of some number of people in the building. So.
And they are also, of course, the Atlanta Spirit is the ones who own it, which also own the Atlanta Hawks basketball team, who are right now doing better than pretty much anybody or the Thrashers ever seem to have, I believe, second round of their playoffs. I don't know if they've lost yet or not, but
in the MB awful.
Yeah, well, we're not even going to bring that up on this yet. I still have
to play.
Well, okay. I have a post. All right, I have a post up on jerseysandhockeylove.com about a blog post by Adrian Dater that they took down. Saying that how much he dislikes the NBA, and then saying that talking about female broadcasters in sports, and frankly, I still have some more work I'm doing on it, but if you want to see it, you can go to my blog at jerseysandhockeylove.com and read it for yourself, because I certainly won't do it justice here. Now 7-5 Chicago.
Well, 3-4 Vancouver.
Yeah, how's that parade route looking? So, yeah,
Well, that's the death knell of, you know. Yeah, that's you plan your parade route. You plan your parade route publicly. Don't say that five times fast. Really, that was hard.
Plan your parade route publicly,
especially at this time of night. Especially this time of night, and that just means you're going to lose. Mm-hmm. So, and by God, what happened to Roberto Luongo? God, 7 goals.
Yeah,
wow.
that's something. And you know, it's not
tough this season. He has not bailed them out when they needed it.
Second round, I don't know. I don't know if you call it a choke, but he's got to be better than their defensemen. And
you could make the argument that for a lot of the series, Vancouver decided that in some games they didn't want to play defense, and in some games they didn't want to play offense. Mm-hmm. And you can't play defense protecting a 1-0 lead forever. You can see it. I was watching the Caps and Pens earlier, and when the Caps got up 4-3, they tried to sit there and play defense, and it's not the Caps' game. Mm-hmm. And just knew Pittsburgh was either going to draw a penalty and score or score 5-on-5. And too many long shifts in their zone, too many times where they hemmed in. I mean, multiple shifts for Pittsburgh got line changes off in the cap zone, the third period. So, and you look at the shot totals in the Vancouver-Chicago series, that tells you everything you need to know. And in some of those games, Vancouver got off 18 shots. They put no pressure on Hoppy, but, you know, Luongo's having to make 35 and 40 saves a night, and, you know, and the Hawks want it more.
And technically, I don't think that it's really any question as to which one between Hobby Bullen and Luongo is the better goalie. But at the same time, Hobby Bullen's the one who's won a cup before. So,
yep.
Yeah.
He's made the saves he's had to make. Mm-hmm. And this is a classic Grant Fuhr win.
Yeah.
Give up 5 and still win the game. Just make two more saves than the other guy.
Yeah. By the way, in this Chicago series, I was listening to the radio right before we did this, and the Chicago Blackhawks broadcaster said that Kessler is went down to block a shot. He said Kessler was donating his body to science in this series. So, I enjoyed that.
Yeah, that's good. That's pretty much what you're doing.
I think that we're kind of at the quick hits here. I wanted to bring up real fast about the we've been talking about teams moving to Canada, and even though this is a minor league team, this is still the AHL, the one tier down from the NHL. It's that the Quad City Flames in was it Moline, Illinois, I believe it is, are moving. The team is moving to. A new ownership group has got it, and bring it to Abbotsford, British Columbia, which is about 50 miles east of Vancouver. And it's they're finding it more lucrative to move a team as far west as you possibly can, a 23-hour drive from there to their nearest competitor, which is in Winnipeg, the Manitoba Moose. They're going to subsidize other teams' travel, and they still find it worth their time.
Wow.
Yeah, and right there, to me, that says, okay, this. I mean, not that Moline is going to be as hockey mad, but there's been a team there for a long time, and they've got a great facility in the city. I've been there before. And it's still more worthwhile to bring a team to close up shop there and move to as far west as you possibly can and well outside the reach of the AHL. If you look at a map, and I'll post a link to a map of the league, you're going to see where those teams are clustered, and it's all the eastern half of the continent. And it's amazing to me that sort of thing is going to actually, if it's going to fly. Still got to be tested, but still,
yeah, they're going to attempt to make it fly, and it is very interesting. This is not even we can't even get into traditional versus non-traditional hockey markets or anything like this. It's just, this is just weird in a sense, that we have this drastic a move from over 2,000 miles out. But, there's just a lot of people love their hockey out in Vancouver. I mean, they should have an AHL team out there. So I don't, it's like everything else.
What's funny is that's going to be putting an NHL team, an AHL team, an ECHL team in the Victoria Salmon Kings, and the Vancouver Giants, who are a WHL junior team, all out there. So nice. That's quite something. And they are hockey mad for the Giants, that's for sure.
And they're hockey mad. They're going to be hockey mad with the Olympics coming up as well. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 2010.
For at least a year, it's not a bad move at all, huh?
Right.
I hadn't thought about the Olympics. That's why you're here, because you always think of these things and make me think about it more. The World Championships just wrapped up, and your winner chicken dinner is Russia.
Yep.
And
outshot 38-17 or something like that, and Brzegalov was brilliant, and Canada lost 2-1 and.
It shows you what the Russians can do. It shows you that, and I believe, if I remember correctly, I think I read somewhere saying that that they are now ranked first in the IAHF standings. So was USA, I think, went down to fifth, or it came up actually to fifth. So
right. Well, the U.S. took the bronze, and it was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, amidst all the gloom and doom on the economic front, some good news for the NHL in terms of ticket base. I saw just before we logged in that just before we went on the air that the Sabres the Buffalo is going to have a 94% re-up rate for season tickets for next year, and it looks like they'll probably actually expand their season ticket base out to 16,000, expecting slightly lower walk-ups during the year, and will offer a greater array of season tickets to be available to lock in guaranteed revenue at their lowest tier price, which is a good sign that even with a couple of down years, that they're still able to fill that building, or at least come close to it.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's what I was going to bring up, was how they haven't they didn't make the playoffs this year. They didn't, you know, it's kind of been a there's been disappointment in the city. You know,
mm-hmm. Oh,
so
sure.
It's, you know, to me that's great. Surprising,
but they still love the team, and they still understand as a market that they have a, you know, they have a pretty good deal in terms of the season ticket deal is a very good deal if you have the money to spend on such a thing. And I think the Sabres are cutting their ticket prices back by something on the order of 11% this year, so which pretty much takes back the last year's increase. But either way, it's the right thing to do. So demand is cut back a little bit, therefore you cut prices back in order to try and meet demand with supply, match demand to supply. And they have 94% re-up rate so far, and they still have 1,000 people on the waiting list. So they should hit their they should sell all their season tickets.
Hmm. Yeah, that's impressive. I wish that were the way case it was right now in Colorado, but sadly, no. I don't think they're going to do well again this year.
Well, Wyshynski and I can disagree all we want, but it's the variable ticket pricing scheme that allows that to happen. So,
the Anaheim Ducks, by the way, are dropping the Iowa Chops as their IHL affiliate. Holy cow!
Wow.
As their AHL affiliate, yeah, this podcast isn't that old, and I don't know what that says for the Big Pig. But I hope that's probably means that there's going to be some affiliation swaps.
Probably.
And hopefully not as I understand it, it's all about attendance for the Chops. And hopefully, they'll find there'll be some swapping of affiliations going on, and that will allow the Chops to find a new affiliate. And hopefully, B, they'll be able to keep that logo, because I really want to see them play the Rockford Ice Hawks. The Battle of the Pig, the Big Pig. That would be awesome. I would take many, many pictures.
That would be awesome. Do you know off the top of your head who Quad City, now British Columbia?
The Flames.
They're affiliated with the Flames, and
the Manitoba Moose, who used to be the closest to Vancouver, are the Vancouver affiliate. So
right, that's what I was about to say. So yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so that'll be there may be a little swap, but I doubt it. It just seems
It may actually be a move, not demanded by, but encouraged by Calgary in order to get their kids closer to home, so that their scouts don't have to travel quite so far in order to see them play more often, yada, yada, yada. They can, you know, they cut costs that way, and they can actually call a kid up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it not be such a huge affair. So,
right.
No, but that may be part.
41 games on the road. And Winnipeg's your first closest, and Des Moines, Iowa is your second closest.
Yeah, I know, but it's better than.
I'm just saying that's going to be. Yeah. I would not want that coaching job at this point.
No. A little rough. No, especially in the AHL, where you play like three games in three nights and stuff like that. If you think the NHL schedule is brutal, the AHL schedule is it's horrible.
So. Yeah. Last thing on my list is that I attended a NHL tweet up. It's a kind of an NHL sponsored, I guess, just meetups over promoted through Twitter here in Colorado. And even though the turnout was a little light, it was the second one of them, and the first one, I guess, had a lot more people at it. I had a great time. Got out and met some local hockey fans I'd never met before, more hockey nerds. So if you are a Twitter fan, you like meeting up with other like-minded hockey fans in your city, definitely check out NHL TweetUp just on Twitter. Search NHL TweetUp, just all one word, and eventually you'll figure out what's going on. So that's all I want to mention about that.
Congratulations to the Chicago Blackhawks. You are in the Western Conference Finals. Woo-hoo! For the first time in, what, 17 years?
Holy cow. And they did it with less shots.
defeating Vancouver 7-5.
Wow.
Give up four goals in the third period, Vancouver did. That's
and,
a breakdown.
So much for the so much for that parade route.
So much for that parade route.
Yeah. So. And with that, that is the last Canadian hockey team in the playoffs.
Is.
So
Cup stays in America.
Cup stays in America. At I don't care how wrong that feels to other people. Sometimes it feels right to me right now. So, unless it goes pretty close to Canada over to Detroit, and then I'll kick some stuff.
So for anybody who said that the Blackhawks were too young, Patrick Kane with the hat trick and 4 points tonight, and Captain Jonathan Toews with two goals and an assist. First two stars of the night, five goals between them. It's just wow. Great job, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. For some reason, off the top of my head, I thought that Sharp got one also, but he did not. So that would have been wrong if I had mentioned that. That's wow. That I'm really happy for the fans in Chicago that they have to be excited. They've been excited about this team all year long. They've stuck with it, and just kind of a hard-nosed kind of grungy team. It's great.
Yep. And apparently the television ratings are through the roof locally, which is the final irony on the grave of Dollar Bill Wirtz. So
yes,
congratulations, everyone.
Is. So they're awaiting their opponent, whether it's the Ducks or the Red Wings, and we still await outcomes in the East. So, but we will know those easily. We'll know all the matchups by the next time that we do a podcast.
Looking forward to it.
Great. Thanks a lot, Tom.
Take care, James.
That wraps up episode number 33 of The Rink. The Rink can always be found at www.rinkpodcast.com, where you can find our Twitter feed, subscribe to us in iTunes, find old episodes, and links to the things we talked about, or leave comments about anything that you heard here on The Rink. Or you can also email us at rink@rinkpodcast.com, and you can call us at 845-704-RINK. That's 845-704-7465. Thanks for listening to The Rink.